Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed, our author of the week. Every Thursday, thanks to our incredible friends at ABC Books on North Glenstone, just south of Kearney, sponsoring our author of the week. And boy, this one could not be timed any more perfectly. Ryan Anderson, our author of Tearing Us Apart, How Abortion Harms Everything and Solves Nothing. Well, it's perfect timing for a couple of reasons. One, the book is released this week. And then, of course, also last Friday, the decision regarding Dobbs, Roe v. Wade, that everyone's been talking about since. And honestly, it's something I think a lot of pro-life people never really imagined would actually happen, but it has. And of course, there's a tremendous amount of misinformation out there about the ruling itself and about abortion and so forth. And so, Ryan Anderson, I want to thank you for being with us this morning on this. And you know, generally speaking, you've got those who are on the pro-life side that recognize this is life and you should not take other people's lives. But there are other harms, and this is much of what you talk about when it comes to the issue of abortion. And I would like to start with that. Exactly what is the major harm of abortion to society?
Sure. I mean, like, the first thing to say is that, you know, the Dobbs decision overturning Roe and Casey is just outstanding, because what it allows us now to do is to make laws that will protect everyone from the violence of abortion. And that first major harm that you ask about is obviously every abortion kills a child. The major harm, the primary harm of abortion is the death of a child, the intended death. It's intentional killing that takes place in abortion. And every one of us should oppose it. It's an unjust killing. The unborn child is an innocent human being with all the same rights, with the same dignity, with the same worth as you and I have. And so just as it's an appropriate function of the government to protect your right to life, to protect my right to life, so too it's an appropriate function of the government to protect the right to life of the unborn. And that doesn't entail any more or any less, you know, legislating morality or imposing religion than laws that ban adult homicide. And so if you're in favor of laws that ban adult homicide, on what grounds do you deny equal protection of the laws to unborn children? Why don't we prohibit a fetal homicide?
Oftentimes when I know I listen to those who are pro-abortion talk about the issue, it's almost bizarro world because they put it in the context of, you know, abortion save lives. And of course, I'm thinking, I don't think that means what you think that it means. But the harm to women, we always have it presented by those on the pro-abortion side as all these wonderful outcomes. And, oh, here's somebody that went to college and started a career because they were able to kill their unborn baby. But they don't ever want to talk about the harm that comes to women because of abortion. And that's something you write about.
Yeah, that's right. So the first chapter of the book really focuses on, you know, the harm to the unborn, the killing of the unborn. The second chapter, and it's a lengthy chapter, focuses on harms to women, harms to mothers, because, you know, there's a variety of immediate physical harms. Abortion is a risky procedure. Chemical abortion is even riskier than surgical abortion, especially when it's done via telemedicine and when the abortion pills are mailed and, you know, the mothers administer them themselves. And so there's kind of immediate physical risks to mothers. There's also the long-term potential for regret, for depression, for anxiety, for psychological complications. You know, most women do not shout their abortions. Most women feel very much that they were constrained, that circumstances in life forced them almost to have an abortion, that they were pressured into it, et cetera, et cetera. But then also, I mean, and this is to my mind, the major harm is that for the past 50 years, we've told women that in order to be equal to men, you have to sterilize your bodies and you have to kill your children. And we've structured our society as if the male body is the normal way of being human and the female body is somehow a defective version of the male body. And, you know, we've structured higher education, we've structured the economy, we've structured so many aspects of our law and our culture on the assumption that to be equal, they have to be the same, and that you need abortion in order to make a woman's body more like a man's body. So now we have the opportunity to say we should really rethink how we can protect female equality without forcing women to sacrifice their children to achieve it. That's the new horizon that the overturning of Roe opens up for us.
We're talking with our author of the week, Ryan Anderson, Ryan T. Anderson. The book is Tearing Us Apart, How Abortion Harms Everything, Solves Nothing. When it comes to abortion, of course, for a lot of folks, I mean, again, it's an issue of life. But when it does come to the Constitution, it's clear when you listen to many people, they don't really know what it says. They think that somewhere in there, Roe v. Wade declared or made legal abortion or protected it. Tell us, if you would, a bit about why that was just wrongfully decided, and how this ruling corrects it.
Sure. So, I mean, this is, I guess, now it's one of the middle chapters of the book. We talk about how, you know, abortion has really harmed constitutional self-government, because there's nothing in the Constitution that protects a right to choose lethal violence. And this is why you see so many people in defending Roe v. Wade. They didn't really defend it on the merits. They didn't point to what part of the Constitution protects a right to choose violence in a womb. They talked about stare decisis. They talked about precedent. They talked about respecting prior decisions. But the way that you respect the Constitution is by admitting when prior decisions got the Constitution wrong. I mean, this is what was so important about Brown v. Board of Education, was it was correcting the mistake of Plessy v. Ferguson. And there have been many of our most cherished Supreme Court rulings were precisely when the Supreme Court said, actually, we got it wrong, you know, several years ago or several decades ago. You know, whether we're talking about equality, whether we're talking about liberty, none of those things justify, you know, lethal violence that kills someone else, especially an innocent third party. All of our liberties have limits. And so, you know, women should have the same freedoms that you and I have. But one of those limits that limits all of our freedoms is that we can't kill innocent third parties.
You mentioned earlier that it isn't so much, I mean, a Christian issue. It is, but it isn't. But that is a lot of the pushback those who support abortion rely on. They claim that you're, you know, just pushing your religion on me. But you do focus a bit in the book, Tearing Us Apart, about that it's not simply a religious issue. It's much more than that.
Yeah, I mean, you can think about it this way. Laws prohibiting fetal homicide are no more religious and no less religious than laws prohibiting adult homicide.
Right.
Now, if the secularist doesn't have a good argument for why we shouldn't allow adult homicide, you know, so much the worse for secularism, right? Now, I think there are good philosophical and theological arguments here. I mean, the theological argument is that we're all made in the image and likeness of God. And that image and that likeness begins when we begin. So when we come into existence, which is a scientific question, there's a scientific question of when does the life of a new human being come into existence? We go through, you know, a dozen pages of embryology and developmental biology to decisively show that we each began at the completion of fertilization. We each began at conception. The first picture of many of us in our baby books is an ultrasound image, right? That's not an alligator. It's not an inorganic form of matter. That's a human being. That's exactly what a human being looks like at 12 weeks of life, at 20 weeks of life. And then you just need to add to that an argument that each and every one of us is endowed by our creator with certain unalienable rights, including these, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right? That's a philosophical theology. There's revealed theology on this, but there's also just straightforward philosophy. If you believe in human rights begin when human beings begin. If you believe we have intrinsic dignity, intrinsic worth, and therefore all of us count equally, well, that means the life in the womb is just as important, just as dignified, just as equal as the life outside of the womb. So again, it's no more religious, but no less religious than any of our other laws protecting innocent human lives.
Well, and it sure has become advantageous to be pro-life when you more and more have science on your side. I mean, some of these things that just the technology developments that have come about over the past several generations really make it just undeniable that we're talking about life.
That's exactly right. You know, we have three kids right now. You know, God willing, we'll have more, but I can remember each and every one of their ultrasounds. Mm. You know, I can remember, particularly with the first one, because, you know, we had never done this before, you know, going in for that 12-week ultrasound, the technician saying, that's your baby's heartbeat. That's your baby's face. And, you know, and she never used the word fetus. She never used euphemisms for the heartbeat, like cardiac polar activity. You know, each and every time she spoke the plain truth, because when we're happy about the baby, we all know what the truth is. You know, she then printed off the ultrasound pictures for us. We then texted those images to both sides of the family, you know, both sets of grandparents, the aunts, the uncles. We know the truth here, and we celebrate it when we're happy about it. When we're unhappy about it, when it might be a problematic pregnancy, when it might be a bad time to be pregnant, the solution here isn't to deny the truth. The solution here isn't to kill the baby. The solution here is to rally around that mother, rally around that family, and provide the supports they need to choose life. And that's going to require both law and public policy and a culture, right? Ultimately, we want a society where abortion is both illegal but also unthinkable.
We're talking with our author of the week, Ryan T. Anderson, tearing us apart how abortion harms everything and solves nothing. So Missouri is a state that had a so-called trigger law put into effect in one of a number of states in which abortion is not going to be something that is legal in the state. There are some states that obviously they aren't that way. What I worry about to some degree is that the left, because they really are pro-abortion, it's not pro-choice, it's pro-abortion, and you can even hear it in their rhetoric now, it's like they are determined to have even more abortions occur in this country because this decision was so wrong. And so they're adamant. You hear about businesses that are going to pay mothers to kill their babies if they're employees and pay for their travel in order to do so, that, you know, we could potentially end up with a situation where even more abortions end up occurring. So it's my final question as we wrap up here, knowing that that's at least a potential. I mean, it, being in the middle of a state here that's now pro-life state, we can't pretend as if abortions aren't going to happen. So what should pro-life people do?
Everything. And I mean that very seriously, that every one of us, you know, even in a pro-life state of Missouri, has a role to play. Like, none of us can sit on the sidelines. The reason that Alexandra and I wrote this book was that we didn't know, but we figured we could count to five that Roe was going to be overturned the last week of June. And so we wanted a book that would be released the last week of June, more or less empowering people to bear witness to the truth about life. And each and every one of our listeners needs to figure out, given my gifts, my talents, the place in the world where I've been placed, what can I do? And maybe it's working on legislation. Maybe it's volunteering at a pregnancy resource center. Maybe it's making a lot of money and donating it to a pregnancy resource center, or donating it to a law firm that's going to be enacting these laws. Maybe it's, you know, working in the corporate world to have corporate policies that promote motherhood rather than promote abortion, right? There's going to be a role for each and every one of us. And what we hope with the book is that it will empower people, right? It'll empower our listeners to feel confident that they know all of the arguments, they know all of the counter arguments, they're ready to bear witness to the truth, because this conversation is coming up, right? This weekend, it's 4th of July weekend. Supreme Court just ruled last week on this. People are going to be talking about it. And the only question is, are you prepared to give a persuasive answer?
Ryan T. Anderson, Tearing Us Apart, How Abortion Harms Everything and Solves Nothing, available now. Our author of the week, thank you, sir. I appreciate you being with us this morning.
Thank you.
Springfield's Talk 104.1, like all our Author of the Week books, you can pick up Tearing Us Apart at ABC Books on North Glenstone, just south of Kearney. Springfield's Talk 104.1, I'm Nick Reed.